Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Fulton County Thrivecast. We're exploring the dynamic landscape of Fulton County, Ohio's economic development initiatives. We'll uncover the driving forces behind the economic growth, featuring interviews with key leaders, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who are shaping the future of Fulton County, Ohio. Businesses don't only operate in Fulton County, Ohio, they are thriving.
Welcome back to Thrivecast. I am Kelly Cove, and today I am joined with Brian Gear from Manikin Smith Group. Brian, can you tell us a little bit about what Manikin Smith is?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having us on. So Manikin Smith is an engineering and environmental firm here in Northwest Ohio. We've been around since 1955. We do a lot of different things to help out both the public sector and the private sector. A lot of it, if you just think of the infrastructure that you see out in your space, that's what we do.
Great. And Manikin Smith, you just mentioned, since 1955, so almost 70 years, coming on 70 years. And Manikin Smith is truly an American dream story. How was it started?
Right. So it's a really fun story. Our founder, for the namesake that we have now, Manik, is a Mr. Jan Manik. He came to the U.S. during World War II. His family had to flee Europe, and they were sponsored to come into Ohio, down in Ada, Ohio. Him and his family, all of them were very educated people, but he got his engineering degree and started our, has our company start from the T.C. Beibensheimer Company, which was his original firm, but started it as Manik, and it's had a few other names along the way. But yeah, it was really neat how he was able to come, get an education, and then really build us into the company we are now. A lot of our culture is still built on Mr. Manik.
And you started right here in Northwest Ohio.
That's correct, in Toledo.
It started in Toledo. And how big is your territory now? Is there multiple locations?
Well, we're actually throughout the Midwest now. Wow. We have 21 different offices, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan. We're getting into Indiana. We're down in Alabama, and we're in West Virginia.
Wow. So, like I said, the American dream story. I mean, starting here with one location, and now here we are 70 years later and that many states in that broad of a region. So can you tell us about the services? What is the process? What do you offer to a client when they come to Manikin Smith?
Okay, great. Yep. So we're a little unique. You'll find a lot of times engineering firms, environmental firms will specialize in a particular area. We're a little bit different. What we try to do is bring to the customer all the services that would be needed through the process. So you would have in your like early beginning of a project, we can help with planning and financing, you know, incentive programs and grants. We can help with traffic studies, utility studies, ecological type stuff, wetlands, other if it's a brownfield site where there may have been contamination, we can help with that. The site planning process with the communities, all the way into design. We have structural, civil, geotech, transportation engineers, environmental engineers. So really anything that somebody needs to come in and develop a piece of property, whether it's been developed before or not, we can go all the way through right into construction and help them up until they're commissioning and coming on board.
I think a lot of those services are things that we don't necessarily think about if we're outside of the building field. If you hear, oh, you know, I heard that they're going to build X, Y, and Z building over here, and you know, 6 months later, that building's not up yet, and you think, why is this taking so long?
Right.
Well, there's the things that we don't see on our end, which are those things like the mapping and the ecological studies, and there's so much more planning that goes into it than what we really realize on the outside looking in.
That's right, and it's all necessary, right? Those protections, those permitting processes are in place, and you need to follow what the communities require. So, but with that, you can have 13 or 14 different permits you might be looking for to cover all your bases on that. So yeah, it does take time.
Right, it takes time, and there's a lot of things that are underground that we don't realize. You don't see it, so it's out of sight, out of mind. And when you're trying to dig a big hole into the ground to put something there, you don't think about the utilities that might be located there, or what's going on underneath our feet.
Right, well, that's a great example. So especially when you get into brownfield sites, there could be utilities that have been there for decades and been abandoned. you don't want to be hitting that. You also have soft soils, right? Organic soils. You might have rock. All these things can affect your foundation design and things like that. So the more you can learn up front, you don't get surprises during construction, right? That's at the end of the day, you dig the hole and then that old utility's there, that bedrock is there and you didn't know it. It hurts the project.
Right. And there's so many requirements that, again, if, when you're on the outside looking in, that we don't realize. You know, there's certain things that the government is looking for as far as what is your impact on the actual ground there. There's certain things that you can't disturb certain areas.
Exactly. And even as you look at like federal grants, things like that, or federal agencies getting involved, they have specific processes to understand that impact, not just physical impacts, but socioeconomic impacts and things like that as well. So again, that all takes time and is part of the NEPA process.
It takes time, and I think it's really important what you said, that it's everything in-house. You have, from start to finish, you can assist with that process instead of it being, okay, we're going to bring this person in to do this and this person in to do this, and then you need all these moving parts to then work together, which is not always easy to do. So to have everything in-house start to finish is a huge advantage for a company that's looking to come into this area or any of the areas that you service to be able to bring a facility here.
Right. It does. It can save time and it can save costs because you have one project manager that's working with those different subject matter experts. So it also helps with the integration of design with different components that may be coming in. So if you don't have the geotechnical engineer, the environmental engineer, the structural engineer all knowing and understanding each other, there can be a disconnect. You can miss a key component, but where our teams work together every day together, it tends to help and bring all that together more efficiently.
Yeah, definitely. And you had talked about the different services that you offer, but just to kind of get a little bit more into them and maybe give some local examples that people can think about. When you talk about brownfield revitalization, so a specific example that we could give is Schneider Park. Schneider Park, I know a lot of the local soccer teams play soccer there.
Sure, sure. So yeah, that was an award-winning project for us. It came about through our kind of our geo-environmental group. But there, that's really, again, having that full understanding of how the community can bring grants to improve quality of life there, right? This wasn't just a development where a developer's coming in. We needed to work within the funding that would be available, maybe help them pursue funding because we can help with the materials, the cost estimates, and things like that, that you can go after it. And then, yeah, it's really a great facility. And that's part of what we try to do with every project we do. You're either trying to bring jobs, right? You're trying to improve the infrastructure, make it safer, public health and welfare, and then quality of life with a park like Schneider Park.
Yeah, sure. And you're talking about funding. Is it kind of, do people come to you and say, help us find the funding? Or is it, hey, I heard that these grants are available. What can we do to utilize that money over in this space?
Right. It's really a little bit of both. There may be an economic development organization that kind of knows the funding that works best for their community and what they're trying to achieve. And they just need the help being able to put the applications together and come to somebody that knows the process with the state or the federal government. The other piece could be, there could be funding that we know of, that we know will have availability, and we can take that to the different communities and say, this safety grant's available. You know, you're having a high accident rate at this intersection. Maybe we can help each other out. So it's a little bit of both.
And that's maybe where a lot of these roundabouts have come in.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, we've done some of that out here. You see the roundabouts, bridges, right? There's a bridge inspection program that the state does, and we have an excellent group of bridge engineers. And you know, we've done some pretty unique stuff with Waterville, Napoleon, and elsewhere.
Yeah, I did see some of the bridge things that you've done with. So I guess, does that tie in your civil engineering then?
It does. It's kind of a little, we call it civil engineering. We also call it transportation engineering. So we have structural engineers that do bridges and things like that, but we also do work like in the industrial environment too, where we help out with that.
Yeah, I saw Fallen Timbers as one example.
Yeah, we worked on that
Kalahari.
One.
People,
yeah, that's
people
right.
Visit
yeah,
there a
that's
lot.
Right. Yeah.
And even locally, the Wabash Cannonball Trail.
Yeah.
There was some work done there.
Yeah,
there, guys.
Doing your homework. Yeah, those are some great projects. Yeah.
There's a lot of them, so it's hard to pick and choose which ones to use as examples. But obviously, these are kind of in our local area, things
right.
that people are familiar with.
Right.
And when you talked about the construction engineering side of it, so you know, mm-hmm. inspections and zone safety and materials testing, you talked about
right.
the bridge inspections, you had to test the concrete.
Yep, yep, we do all of that. We have our own labs, we have our own drill rigs, we have survey crews. So a lot of what we do, you know, people think of engineers sitting there mm-hmm. On CAD, but it's a lot of field services too that we provide to collect all the information.
Right. And we talked about ecological services a little bit too.
Right,
and
right.
you're looking even endangered species surveys is something you do in-house.
Right.
Wetland mitigation.
Yep.
Habitat restoration.
We do. Yep. Yep. And actually the Wabash Cannonball Trail is a good example of all of that coming together. So those that have used that trail, you see it almost looks like a small road. That was to state requirements. So you needed a transportation engineer that understood ODOT requirements. We had threatened and endangered species living in the rail beds that we had to protect. We also had to collect seeds for a specific thistle that was out there so that once we were done doing the project, we could put the seed back down. There was old railroad bridges that we had to evaluate and be able to make so you could safely cross these old railroad bridges that are old timber bridges. And then you had the traditional civil drainage that you just had to properly grade it and drain it. So it pulled, that was a neat project to pull a little bit of everything in what Mannequin Smith does.
Yeah. And on the surface, it's like, oh, they're taking an old rail and turning it into a bike trail
yeah.
and not even thinking anything about how much work goes into doing exactly that.
Yep.
Keeping it as safe as possible, keeping the nature around it as undisturbed as possible.
Yep, exactly.
That's amazing. And another landscape architecture, another mm-hmm. thing you don't really think about, the fact that how exactly you're shaping the land to make like these little, looks like little hills or ponds,
yeah.
but it's actually all things that impact the building site.
Oh yeah, I'm a little jealous of landscape architects as an engineer because, you know, what I design gets buried and nobody really thinks about it, but they're the ones that really put the look to the project, right? They can yeah. make anything look fantastic. We got a great group of planners and landscape architects, very talented. They can help out anywhere from initial concepts and perspectives for a new site all the way through at the end with detailed landscaping, you know, shrubs, plantings. And it can be where you're looking for it to look like a golf course, or you mm-hmm. could be going for a very natural habitat and you want to just use local plantings. Yeah, they're really a neat mix of creative and technical people.
For sure. You don't even think about the safety aspect of it. Like if we plant a tree here, is
right.
site going to be inhibited from this
you got
angle
it.
Or this
site
angle.
Distance. So yeah, all right.
There's so much more that
come
goes
on
into
board.
Once you start. Once you really start getting into it, there is and yeah. You know, just another brief example is kind of in the area, about an hour from here. You can take a tour at the Rouge plant, the Ford truck factory. You can
right.
take a tour.
Right.
They did a huge effort on sustainability there, and also it was a 70-year-old plant that there was a lot of things that flew with the EPA back then, not so much now. So
right,
there was
exactly.
a lot of things that needed to be done there. So there was a huge polluted brownfield there, a lot of innovative sustainability that you can see right there. I know, like I said, they do a tour, mm-hmm. but there was, I got to read it so I get it right. The phytoremediation removing the PHA compounds.
That's right.
So that was a byproduct of steel processed back in the day, back 70 years ago, decades ago. And now they've planted things there. The landscape architects have gone through, planted things there that break down those compounds in the soil and give off mm-hmm. an organic compound now that is harmless. And to be on top of that, that's also powered by solar energy to do that. So really that sustainability model you can see right there. They have the living roof on there. You said you know a little bit about?
A little bit, yeah. So green roofs, that was pretty innovative at the mm-hmm. time because that's been in place for a little bit. But yeah phytoremediation, just like mm-hmm. you said, is you use the plants to pull those contaminants out of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes time, right? You know, if you needed to use that land right away, you would be getting into excavating it out, going to a landfill, a lot of testing. So this is something that can be done when you have some time. The green roofs are really trying to deal with stormwater, deal with heat sinks, things like that. And it's really just a series where you're growing, and then you have a series of aggregate and sand that the water filters through, and then it's discharged.
Yeah, and so then you're discharging water without using chemicals to treat it. It's being naturally treated.
That's right.
Before it's getting discharged.
It would be natural water, right?
Yeah, there's so many companies now that are, out of necessity, partially because of the EPA, looking at more of these sustainability models, but also just because it's of growing importance to a lot of companies. They want to be able to promote that they are working as sustainably as possible.
Right, right. And that is evolving over time, right? You're talking about the green roofs and the phytoremediation, and we moved into kind of stormwater detention and holding the water for time to let things settle out. And now, you know, we see communities even getting into infiltration and forebays and staging, and it's really just trying to reduce the impact of development on the environment.
Mm-hmm. And that it goes into another field that you service, which is waste management. So talking right. about that wastewater, and obviously there's solid waste that has to be dealt with, and air pollution that
right.
is something of big importance. And I would imagine in this area with a lot of agriculture, that there is a place here for Manikin Smith to do a lot of that work with agriculture as well.
There is. So kind of first touching on the landfills, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, we do landfill design as well. It's mm-hmm. it's been a big part of our environmental program. It's really a blending of the environmental and the civil engineers. But we branched off with that, and then I'm going to go to the agriculture a little sure. bit too. Methane recovery, you're talking mm-hmm. about air quality and things like mm-hmm. that. You know, collecting methane and turning it into something usable. And on the agricultural side, that's something we got into a few years ago, and it's really been going well, which is anaerobic digesters within the agricultural community, looking at dairy, swine, poultry facilities where they have this I guess we call it feedstock, but basically they're dealing with the byproducts from the animals. That's something that the ODA would be working with them on, permitting them on. We're taking that, putting digesters in place, pulling renewable natural gas off, which generates renewable credits as well as an energy source. Mm-hmm. And then you have the digestate come off, and you can use that for other things as well. So again, that's one that really pulls in our agricultural piece, our civil piece, our structural piece, our mechanical and electrical piece, our instrumentation and controls, and at the same time, our utilities and stuff like that we do.
Yeah, there's so much that Manikin Smith does. I mean, have we covered all of the services?
Oh my gosh, I got to go back and look. We do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Like I said, from early on planning all the way through construction, we have technicians and professionals in the field. We have a lot of engineers, planners, scientists in our offices. We have our own labs for doing geotech and cultural resources, which is really cool, archaeological work and stuff like that. I really enjoy reading their reports. I get lost in those. So yeah, it's really diverse. People can go to our website at maniksmithgroup.com. To get the full list, and there too, you'll see we're growing, we're hiring, we're up to 560 people now,
wow.
with the 21 offices.
Wow.
So we have requisitions out for engineers, technicians, surveyors. So if anybody's wow. interested, head to the website.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. To grow as much as you have over 70 years, that human resource component is probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest. You know, you need
yeah.
the newest and greatest innovation, and also the people that have had the experience
right.
for years and years. So
you're right. We're selling talented people, right? We don't create a product that you're going to sell. We're selling people.
Absolutely. Great point. And can you mention again the website that people can go to?
Yep. www.maniksmithgroup.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Brian.
Yeah, thank you.
It was great to have you this afternoon.
Yeah,
thank
really
you.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.